pardon my heart if it ruins your party.
That's the opening of the title poem of Marcus Jackson's book, Pardon My Heart, winner of the 2019 Ohio Anno Book Award for Poetry. The Kaveh Khanum Fellow and Ohio native explains what inspired this second collection.
I wanted to write some celebratory love poems that featured African-American speakers or characters. And that's how it started.
Marcus Jackson also shares poetry from his first book, exploring his interracial family and hometown of Toledo, before taking us to New York City, where he lived for 7 years. Join us for this poetic tour on New Letters on the Air, produced by New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and when Marcus Jackson came to Rutgers University's Midwest Poet Series in November 2018, we had already talked when he was with the Symphony Poets, four Kaveh Khanum Fellows who were traveling the country celebrating the poetry and influence of the late Etheridge Knight. At that time, Marcus was teaching in Tennessee with his first book pending, though he was published by The New Yorker and other magazines. Now at The Ohio State University in Columbus, he has two acclaimed books. Here's the opening poem of his 2011 collection, Neighborhood Register, published by Cavan Carey Press, depicting the Toledo house where he was raised.
645 Phillips Avenue. House whose basement flooded during every rowdy rain. House whose staircase creaked like the knees of the retired farmer I imagined built it. My family rented it a century after he could have lived. Ambulance garage adjacent, sirens that breached our sleep. Most my parents' fights happen mornings. Coffee maker prattling, birds pecking yard for food. With sister and friends, I dragged dad's ashtray cools, poles banked in the jagged snub before butt. A crony borrowed my bedroom to bumble with Danielle Combs, Magnavox lilting dubbed R&B. Some nights by myself, I climbed out a window to sit on moss-blotched roof and meld my eyes to sky. Whoever owns this house has torn it down. A removal crew has yet to truck up. Mounds of ripped away planks, mortar, and stray gray strands, plaster iron balled to flour, disconnected intestine of pipes. Why don't we find and lift a couple intact bricks? Let them chalk our palms maroon. Let them convey the weight it takes to cog a wall, to tolerate 110 Ohio winters, let alone the sounds and the heat each tenant pressed against it.
645 Phillips Avenue, that's the opening poem in the book Neighborhood Register. I'm talking today with Marcus Jackson, and I think that sets the tone for this book. You know, it gives us a place, anchors us in Toledo, which is where you were born and ended up going to college. Yeah. We've got so many great family stories in Neighborhood Register, visiting my great auntie, Chester, Georgia. And then you've got little sister to Jessica at school, which is a really fun one, where you think you have to defend your sister. There's one about your father's father, I'm assuming it's your grandfather. Is he still around or is he gone?
Yeah,
did you ever even meet him?
He passed before I was born.
Okay, so let's get you to read the two grandfather poems.
Okay, Escape 1961. My dad's dad glides alone in his copper Chrysler, rear fenders winged like a murderous bird, up a stretch of 23 North, flanked each side by reedy marsh. He grins. The gold bridge between two of his teeth glints an angled sun and highway wind. In the console tray, a lucky smolders like a departed thought. He can't know exactly how dank his lungs remain from a younger living dredging coal mines. Every Saturday, he escapes to Adrian, Michigan, his white mistress, their high yellow daughter with flat black hair who climbs a neighbor's cherry tree, bare feet and dirty fingers, as pluck by pluck she eats the cool crimson globes until her daddy's tires rustle the driveway gravel as if jerking her from a dream.
Escape 1961 from Neighborhood Register.
I'm trying to use portraiture and family folk tales and snippets of stories passed on by people that I knew about people that I didn't quite know in my family. Because I think that by approaching the subjects that way, it was much truer to the multi-year exploration of my own identity and trying to figure out who's who, what's what, when it comes to my lineage and my future.
Well, you do it very well. I mean, I love this kind of poetry myself. And then the other one is The Passing for Leo O'Connor, whom you did know, because you get that real sense in here.
The Passing. Grandpa's lungs and liver cancerous. A nurse brought him pills and paper thimbles. His feet peek from the sheets, purple webs of veins risen to ankle skin. He waved me close and spoke, his voice soft as moss. Mama picked a resting site spread generous with birches. In a pavement gray suit, Dad cried while nearing the body. Grandpa had been the lone person from Mama's side to show years ago when they married, black groom and white bride. Outside an aunt's house after burial, sun lulling into dusk, with cousins I passed a football. Its mane lace had unseamed, flapping through the air every throw. From the flimsy railed porch, Dad stepped to where we played. He capped my head with a large hand and pulled me against his chest. Breath bold with beer, he said a slow sentence about Grandpa Leo and love, then cast me back to the game, to the other boys with O'Connor blood, streetlights watt by watt, rising as a choir of glare.
The Passing for Leo O'Connor, and that's from Neighborhood Register by Marcus Jackson. This is New Letters on the Air. You know, I hadn't even thought about it until hearing them back to back, because one of them's in the first section of the book and the other's in the fourth section of Neighborhood Register, but they both touch on interracial relationships.
Yeah.
This is a part of your life, obviously.
Definitely.
Your mother is white, your father is black. Mm-hmm. How has that impacted your life?
No,
You identify as black, but you must identify across race, too?
Yeah, I think at different points of one's life, identity is fluid or less fluid. Growing up and walking around at a very young age, my sister is only about a year younger than me, and we look like twins. And walking around in like a neighborhood of color with my mom, we sort of stuck out. Also, my mom used to be a seamstress and make custom draperies for more affluent people. So when we were in white spaces, we stuck out too. So my own identity was something that I've been thinking about and aware of from a very young age.
You play a lot with form in here. And I think we can hear in those two poems back to back, there's a real difference in the rhythm of those two and what you're doing with that. But it always comes back to the core of who we are as human beings. I feel like you tap into that. So for you, it was really an exploration and trying to find your identity.
Yeah, and I think it still is, especially now being a parent. My spouse is a person of color and my child's a person of color. So it's another chapter or set of books to my own personal identity and the lineage of identity that I'm passing on.
Yeah. Well, we also talked back in 2011 when you were here with three other poets to make up the Symphony Poets, and you guys were here for Park University's Ethnic Voices Poetry Series.
Yeah,
for sure.
Dwayne Betts. Dwayne on the page will usually go by Reginald Dwayne Betts. Randall Horton, John Murillo, and myself.
And you had such a wonderful camaraderie about you, yeah. But the symphony, you couldn't keep it together because you guys are spread out all
yeah.
over the place.
Yeah,
so.
We're all in different cities, and two of us are parents, and all of us are now married, and we have more complex jobs and identities and existences, so.
Yeah.
Well, we don't see each other as much as we used to.
It's too bad because there was a great vibe between yeah. all four of you who had all experienced Cave Canem,
mm-hmm.
which is a wonderful group for helping emerging poets develop mm-hmm. their works. How many times have you been to Cave Canem? And I think now you're one of their instructors, mentors.
Yeah,
what do you call them?
I'm one of the staff members there now. And then as a fellow, I was there for 3 years. Once you get accepted to the fellowship, you have 3 summers. To attend the retreat. But it's a lifelong relationship and family, because once you're connected to everybody, I think most people find ways to stay in touch with each other. And I think we're always writing in conversation to each other once we meet, and we become really close to a few of the people that we have retreats with.
I often think there's a conversation between poets on the page. Mm-hmm. A lot of times to poets you've never met,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, must be really exciting to have it in conversation with people you know who are poets.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you send stuff back and forth to each other? Or?
Yeah. Well, if we have drafts that are troubling us, sometimes we'll send to each other. A lot of us will dedicate certain poems in new projects to some of our closest Cave Canem folks. And I think that we tend to write with an inherent belief that the people that we're closest with are the readers that matter most, which kind of works well for poetry, because if you have a more particular reader, a more intimately known reader in mind, sometimes the poems can be a little bit more unique and honed in on their subjects and their language.
Why don't we have you read one of your poems from Neighborhood Register that was included in the Cave Canem 2007 anthology? It's called Harlem Lanes, and this will take us to New York City, where you got your MFA at NYU. Is
yeah.
that right?
Mm-hmm. Harlem Lanes. Columbia students of color arranged a bowling party on a Friday in February. A group of us marched through slicing cold, down 125th Street, sidewalk vendors bundling merchandise for the night. Inside, music thumped. Women we came with began dancing before they tugged off coats. We shared pitchers of beer. The first sip left foam on someone's lip like a shore just touched by tide. We traded our shoes for red and blue ones, entering names into a keypad that fed a score screen hanging above our lane. Past midnight, we shot at bottle-shaped pins. We strutted or frowned, depending how many we knocked down. I don't know if it's boring or if it's a blessing, how all us brown and beige and yellow people did nothing more for hours than laugh and dance and aim between gutters during the brunt of winter in Harlem.
Harlem Lanes. That's from Marcus Jackson's book, Neighborhood Register. And it was also published in the Cave Canem 2007 anthology. You're listening right now to New Letters on the Air. How long did it take you to put together Neighborhood Register, your first book?
I would say there are maybe a couple poems from my MFA days in there. I started my MFA in 2004, and the book came out in 2007, so about 7 years. Some of the poems took multiple years to figure out. Some were a little bit easier or a little bit more quickly flowing into their final form. But yeah, about 6 or 7 years.
And you had a chapbook before this.
Mm-hmm.
So that had 6 poems in it, I believe.
Yeah, it's like 6 or 8 poems.
Yeah. And so those are your earliest works.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of those, I didn't see
There were a couple that made it into the book, and then the others are just sort of uncollected and belong only in that chapbook and have a different sort of feel. Yeah.
You mentioned at the Midwest Poet Series that you started writing poetry when you were 16.
Mm-hmm.
What was the point where you realized that it was something you really wanted to seriously pursue?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to pursue writing towards the end of high school because I'm a pretty obsessive, anxious person, and I feel more control when I'm making sentences and revising sentences than I do in most every other phase of life. So I thought I was going to get into journalism, and then I fell in love with contemporary literature and poetry my sophomore year in undergrad when I had a wonderful teacher teaching my first workshop. His name is Tim Geiger. He's a wonderful poet, teaches at University of Toledo.
Yeah, you thank him
in
your book.
And he runs a beautiful letterpress. They have some of the most impressive, still functional antique equipment and new equipment, and they make really glorious broadsides.
Oh, did he publish your chapbook?
Yeah, and limited edition chapbooks.
How nice. So he introduced your first work to the world.
Yeah, and he has a dual degree in book arts from Alabama and an MFA in poetry from Alabama.
Well, let's go back to your family, and then I promise we'll go to your new book.
Sure.
You have a son. What's his name?
She actually identifies as a female now.
Her
name is Lennox.
Lennox.
Yeah.
Okay.
For your first child, the first 2 years is quite an odyssey of sleeplessness, confusion, straight up joy, and just trying to figure it out. And then once they start talking and moving around and making little poems on their own, it's much more fun on a daily basis, I think, than it was early on.
I did an interview years and years ago with Michelle Boisseau, who passed away. One of her early books had so many poems in it about her daughter discovering language.
Yeah.
And it made her look at language in a really different way. Have you experienced that?
Definitely. Just the way that certain words in Lennox's brain and voice have a holiness for her. I think it makes you appreciate words that in the adult world, you overlook a little too much. There's a sense of, I don't want to say purity, there's a sense of majesty for certain words that maybe we overlook or we don't quite get into our own poems as grown-ups like we should.
Interesting. Well, Pardon My Heart is a collection of, can I say it's a collection of love poems?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because I think it is. Is there anything in here that you think has been influenced by Lennox
language? Yeah, definitely the poems that were written later in the process, closest to the publishing date of the book when I had already become a parent. I started writing some of the poems in there before my wife was pregnant, but some of the later poems are definitely dealing with, I think, the urgency, the anxiety, and probably the utmost responsibility of parenthood, and they contemplate love and personal identity a little bit more in the lens of being a parent. And how do you reconcile the dangers of the world, the beauties of the world differently as a parent versus, you know, when you're a 20-something starry-eyed lover?
Yeah, exactly. When life was simpler.
Yeah.
Would you like to read one of those?
Sure. This poem is called Dark-Eyed Air. Air is an inheritor of what have you. Dark-Eyed Air. We're watching living Europeans dramatize the lives of dead, aestheticized Europeans, grabbing a Monday matinee near the center of an American city in which our significantly Negro son is learning the paradoxes of sharing before lying for a nap on an assigned cot at daycare. The movie spans many foggy heaths and bleak castle expanses that look like no black folks have ever or will ever pass through. So my wife and I, sipping whiskey from a flask, watch cautiously in the empty film house, somehow feeling all the cinematic and cultural whiteness might advance from the screen across the dark ceiling and walls and swallow us. Our wariness dissolves and boredom forms. So we walk out, the avenue's urgent motion and sound renewing us, and we head for a pub with a colorful jukebox that holds plenty of Donny Hathaway, a man whose mind, like Macbeth's, was full of scorpions, a man who, unlike Macbeth, made music sure to stir my wife and me until we must gather ourselves, pay for our frank drinks, take a full bus, and retrieve our son, dark-eyed heir to all the streets and songs this kingless land sustains.
Dark-eyed heir. That's from the latter part of the 2018 collection by Marcus Jackson called Pardon My Heart, and this is New Letters on the Air. This last poem mentioned your son, who now sees himself as...
Yeah, as trans.
How did you guys deal with that?
Yeah, so there's been extensive research done that most children will have quite a strong sense of what their gender identity is and is not by the age of like 2.5. So Lennox expressed interest, as most kids do, to wear a bunch of different types of clothes across any gender identity, and then started insisting maybe at the age of 3, no, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. And of course, we had conversations with Lennox and laid it all out, what it's going to be like entering our world and our nation, and that we have Lennox's back no matter what. And then Lennox was like, yeah, I'm a girl. That's cool.
How about that?
And then there's everyday conversations that we have with friends, with classmates. But I think that if we're supported at an early enough age by the main people in our lives, whoever we feel we are, whatever we want to pursue is much more accessible. And that's one of the beauties of relationships, especially the parent-child relationship.
Yeah.
It's sort of trying to change spaces or adapt environments to the possibilities of humankind.
That's pretty amazing, actually. It's good you were open to it. I mean, you guys were really listening to her.
Yeah.
Is Lennox her birth name?
Yep.
Is that, yeah. So that's kind of nice.
We fell in love on Lennox Avenue. So. And that was my wife's idea. She gets all the credit for the name.
Oh, wow.
That's why it's spelled like that. Most people spell Lennox with two N's.
Yeah.
But it's spelled like the Lennox Ave in
New York City.
New York City, yeah.
It's kind of nice that it's a gender-neutral name.
Right.
I mean, that worked out
right.
Well.
Yeah.
I noticed that 3 of these poems, and Pardon My Heart, were published in Rockhurst University's literary magazine. I think it's called Rockhurst Review.
Yeah.
And the editor of it is somebody you've known for a long time, Elizabeth Barnett, who is also now the new head of the Midwest Poets series, which brought you here to Kansas City. And so I thought we should have you read one of those, and I picked out Full-Time Driver.
Yeah, Full-Time Driver. I took every hour they offered, delivering lukewarm pizzas by means of an 86 LeSabre, the back tires almost bald. Managers rarely yelled or wore me out about moving too slow. When we blundered orders, most customers understood. My brother worked there too. He was beautiful. I should have kissed him. One good forehead kiss while such a gesture might have mattered. Women, shoeless in their doorways, gave me resigned smiles as they paid. Undergraduate smokers proposed hits of their burning herb. The richest part was when business would ebb, and I'd coast the summer streets. The air felt like a cool fruit. The engine block churned a sure tune. The rear view caught moments of low moons. Time was a tame lake. My hand skimmed from the front of a canoe.
Full-Time Driver from Pardon My Heart by Marcus Jackson. This is New Letters on the Air. What made you decide that you were going to write a series of love poems? Did you set out to do
that? Pure foolishness. No. I was pretty much over the moon at the time I took on the project.
That's when you first met.
Recently married. This is 2010-11, so it's right smack dab in the second half of the first Obama term. Got married in Long Island, leaving Harlem for jobs, both of us, and no kids yet, and just living it up. And I wanted to write some celebratory love poems that featured African-American speakers or characters, and that's how it started. And then it got complicated pretty quick. In terms of the writing of the poems toward a large sequence or a full collection.
Yeah. I feel like the first line in this poem explains why you needed to write a book of love poems. It's called Even When Spilling.
Oh, yeah. I've got to do something with all this longing, I think. Listening to the interstate sound so purposeful as I walk the overpass with a flask, the dusk heavy as a held tongue. During the day, amplifications of my mistakes, long ago and recent, kept deafening the edges of me. Of course, so many greater disturbances than my own, so many magnified atoms of unease are spreading through larger, more important elsewheres. But the U.S. is the realm of the self. So I'm telling you of mine, a self which, even when spilling, is such a thirsty thing.
Even When Spilling, from Pardon My Heart by Marcus Jackson. What are you working on now? I mean, do you have a book in view?
I don't really, in terms of a title or a full-blown organizing principle. When I was finishing this book, Pardon My Heart, I started trying to write a couple poems with heroic couplets, just from a formal standpoint. And then I wanted to carry that over and somehow modify it just to start some new poems after the book was done. And I've been doing that. I've been writing couplets whose lines have about 8 syllables a piece, but I'm trying to get them existential, dark, and how should I say, time jumpy, like spanning different historical eras.
Oh.
So I'm trying to neglect scene and narrative until deeper into poems, just as a change of pace, because I always have loved narrative as a reader of poems. And scene-based poetry that finds the little intricacies within scenes.
Yeah, I love that too. I think it's good for poets to always challenge themselves and put something out there. I'm going to get you to read the end poem of your second book, Pardon My Heart. One of the things that comes up some in your first book has to do with breathing, but it's more than that. But I was thinking, Leo, your grandfather, died of you know, having trouble breathing. All these people are smoking, you know, one thing or another.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a lovely ending of the book.
For tonight, my wife has advanced asthma, and I listen sometimes to her breathing while she sleeps. The delicate difficulty, the raspy series of notes her lungs strum, a stone comb pulling through the grasses of oxygen, sand being scattered by a wind the sea only brings during darkness. One night, both our bodies will be completely airless, our stories no more than wisps of dust, our bones simply twigs in Earth's fist. For tonight, at least, I'll be led again through my love's complex breaths into dreams full of beauty and absurdity, full of all I'll forget or disbelieve by dawn.
For tonight, the last poem of Pardon My Heart, published by Northwestern University's Tri-Quarterly Books and winner of the 2019 Ohio Anna Poetry Book Award. Marcus Jackson was recorded while part of Rutgers University's 2018 Midwest Poet Series. For links to his books, visit newletters.org. A production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC, today's show was produced with Natalie Stein, Robert Zimmerman, Ashley Cote, Dylan Piles, Danny Moran, and our wonderful Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.